providing unique reporting on markets and companies since 1990. This is the Cortland Economics Report.
All right, I am back, continuing on with the first hour. And in the second half of this first hour, we are going to be focusing a bit more on the resource sector with Byron King. At least in this segment, I'm chatting with Byron King. And Byron, I want to outline a report that was recently published by McKinsey & Company. You sent it over to me, and this report talks about the decline in reserves. So these are reserves on the books amongst the large gold miners, a general decline. We're just not seeing the same amount of assets or reserves being held by these companies. Now, there's a number of different reasons that we will get into, but first and foremost, can you summarize your takeaway from this general report, please?
Yes, thank you. McKinsey & Company just published a very significant, in my view, report. First of all, it's significant that McKinsey & Company is writing a big report on the gold industry, because McKinsey is a large global consulting company. Something like 80% of the large companies in the world use McKinsey, the big banks use McKinsey, governments use McKinsey, NGOs, nonprofits use McKinsey. So when McKinsey is focusing on something and putting out a publicly available report, that's important. That is serious exposure to that particular issue across a lot of different things. I mean, you know, the news media definitely picks up on these kind of things. The title report is, Can the Gold Industry Return to the Golden Age? And, you know, the little subtitle, Digging for a Solution to the Gold Mining Reserve Crisis, you know. So it's, what we have here is McKinsey basically saying that there is a gold mining reserve crisis. And in the course of the report, which is, you know, 24, 25 pages, something like that, you know, it's talking about the decline in gold reserves of the gold mining companies. And, you know, it's a very well done report, a lot of very interesting, you know, points in it. It hits on things that, if you are familiar with the industry, there's nothing terribly new here, although their charts are very nice. I do, you know, take a look at a report and, you know, look at the charts and admire those charts. They're talking about the lost value across the gold mining industry. They're talking about the decline of reserves. They have the very familiar chart of how exploration and development has just, you know, fallen off almost a cliff, you might say. It's really declined significantly in terms of, you know, what are people finding. And then, you know, axiomatically, you can't discover, or you can't develop what you haven't discovered, and you can't mine, you know, what you haven't developed, you know. So, when the upstream, you know, exploration development pipeline gets choked off, you know, the downstream mining pipeline gets choked off. And they have a nice set of charts in there about how in the last, you know, 7 or 8 years, you know, the total reserves of major gold companies are down 26% since 2012. And the total ounces in the ground reserves for the big gold guys are below the levels at 2007. So they're basically saying that there's not enough, you know, there's a declining reserve issue across the gold mining industry. There's not enough exploration and development. And so, you know, with a company like McKinsey, you know, shining a spotlight on an issue like that, I do think that's positive for the sector, because it makes it easier for people inside the sector to explain, you know, outside the sector, what's going on, and it adds credibility to the point that you want to make. Of, you know, it's not just us gold miners, it's not just us, you know, diggers and drillers, you know, with our hard hats and our steel-toed boots out here, you know, complaining about, you know, what's going on inside the industry. And now we've got kind of the holy water of a company like McKinsey, you know, sprinkled on the issue.
So, Byron, one thing that I found very interesting, and you outlined that stat, that these reserves are down about 26% from 2012, but the peak in mid-2012 down to about where price is now, it's about a 25 to 30% decline. So it's almost falling right in that range of where some of these miners would have to write off some of these marginal assets that they purchased back at the peak of the market. How much do you think this decline has to do with the fact that simply we're in a lower gold environment, and due to accounting regulations, these companies can't carry these marginal ounces on their books?
Well, I think we're looking at a double-edged sword here, or, you know, getting hit from both directions. On the one hand, yeah, the yes, the companies are getting slammed by, you know, by accounting rules, you know, the whole mark to market kind of thing. You see that in the energy industry as well. You know, when oil was $100 a barrel, there was an awful lot of, you know, marginal oil that was carried on the books as a reserve. You know, when oil was $50 a barrel, you know, I mean, well, that oil went away. And so there is that accounting situation, but then when you look, you know, at the nitty gritty of the industry, of the gold mining industry, or, you know, mining in general, you know, precious metals more in particular, even with the money that is still getting put into exploration and an early stage development in the mining industry, I mean, if you don't find it, you don't find it. I mean, if it's it's one of the reasons, I think, why in the last year or so the market has been so friendly towards companies that seem to be showing a good exploration story. I mean, you know, one or two really good drill holes were able to move a lot of these, you know, junior type companies, just because this sense of hope that, gee, maybe this will be the one that locks into that, you know, the next big discovery. Although, really, when you boil it down, there are no really, you know, really big discoveries being made. Very few. I mean, very, very few. And much of what's happening is, you know, kind of brownfield development. You know, you're going back into old systems that have been, you know, worked over, and now people are trying to, you know, kind of find what's left. There's just not a lot of, you know, brand new, you know, eureka greenfield kind of discovery going on anywhere in the world, really.
But how important is that, that there just isn't that discovery going on? Do you think that problem is due to governments not allowing companies to explore, especially in maybe some more profitable areas or some more attractive areas? Or is it the fact that all the easy, high-grade stuff has already been found and is being mined already?
Oh, man, now there's about six different layers of questioning on that one. I mean, yeah, of course there are, you know, social, political type issues. I mean, it's very, very difficult to explore and develop, you know, new levels of resources in, you know, advanced developed countries. I mean, you know, it's very difficult to work in a place like California, you know, I mean, with the environmental regs, and even, you know, so-called mining friendly jurisdictions, you know, Nevada or Idaho or, you know, the Arizona Copper Belt. I mean, for as friendly as those states traditionally are, I mean, it's still a tough move, you know, to make things work. You look at a company like Midas in Idaho, for example. It's a permitting play, you know. I mean, there's no question but that the geology is great, and they're going to redevelop an old brownfield and clean it all up. But it's, you know, boy, you just seem to wait forever to get the permits. And I could mention other places. Now, other places where you have really interesting exploration going on are extremely remote. A company that I've followed for a while is Sabina, up in Nunavut, you know, way, way, way up in the high Arctic of Canada. It's right at the Arctic Circle, in fact, and really nice numbers, really high grade, a banded iron formation, which is a very, you know, it's a very predictable kind of deposit. But, you know, you've got to go that far away in that kind of harsh climate, you know, to find things like that. You go other places in the world, a country like Ecuador, for example. You know, I mean, Ecuador is a beautifully geologically endowed country. I mean, really incredible copper, gold, silver, you name it, mineralization down in Ecuador. But it's problematic in terms of the politics. I mean, you know, they've had a history of anti-outsider, anti-development, and, you know, I mean, the Lundins moved in there. There's a different government now, but at the same time, you've got the national government in Quito dealing with kind of the grassroots resistance out in the field, you know. So, you know, every jurisdiction is different, and which is why, you know, I guess the point to consider here, which is why you have to think in terms of what are we looking for, what kind of numbers, you know, where is it, you know, in terms of the jurisdiction, what's the sociology there, you know, what is the politics there? I mean, you've got to get away from thinking that every geology or every mine development is a geology development, because it's as much sociology as it is geology anymore. And, you know, you bring that whole thing around, you know, you turn that wheel, you know, the rest of the way, And the other side of the coin is that, you know, we're not finding the big numbers. You know, now, that doesn't mean that this stuff isn't out there. It doesn't mean you can't find it. It just means that it's harder and harder to find it. You mentioned, you know, is all the easy stuff picked over? Well, yeah, all the easy stuff is picked over. You know, I mean, there might be something out there that somebody's going to trip and fall over, but it's all serious exploration anymore. I mean, if this isn't, we're not prospecting anymore. We're in the serious exploration business. You know, and that's what you have to think about in terms of running an exploration program.
Well, and that's, I think, kind of a distinction of where the money has been flowing in this market. And let's look at it from an investment angle. Obviously, good high-grade discoveries are still getting some attention, but those are fewer and farther between. And as we kind of outlined with the issue of where some of these resources or the grade of some of these resources, quite frankly, we've been in a sideways market since 2013 and still down a fair bit from those highs in 2011 and 2012. I think the argument of this is a bull market is very difficult to make. So then the trading strategy that seems to work in these type of markets is take positions in the profitable miners, even some of those royalty and streaming companies, the companies that make money, even if the price is going sideways. That is where the money's going to flow first when it does finally start coming in a broader sense to these markets. What do you think about that trading strategy? It's nothing new, but it's just more a function of the market.
Well, I think that's absolutely right. I mean, we were talking about this before we came on the air here, but when you look at some of the companies that have been hot lately, you've seen a couple of, for example, the Australian miners, guys like Kirkland Gold or Newcrest. You know, that a lot of money flowed into them. Well, a lot of investor money flowed into them because these companies are very well run. They've got high margins. They produce a lot of cash. And from an investment standpoint, from investment metric standpoint, there's nothing wrong with, you know, going into a well-run company that's spinning cash. I mean, you know, just like the old saying that might not be so true anymore, but the old saying was that nobody ever got fired for using IBM, you know. But, yeah, you know, nobody ever got fired for putting money into a well-run company that was spinning cash and had good solid margins. And, you know, whether it's an up market, down market, sideways market, but certainly in the metals market that we've been experiencing for the last 4 or 5 years, you can see why money migrates into those plays. When things do start to get better, you know, when we do start to see more of a pulse in gold or silver or copper, things like that, you've noticed that the companies that tend to move the quickest, strongest are the royalties and streamers. And you know, because you have no mining risk. You know, these companies are incredibly efficient in terms of who they are and what they do. I mean, basically they have an office with a couple people and some telephones and computers and things like that. They're not running a mine. They don't have to worry about that stuff. They just sit around. They're more like a bank. They sit around and they cash the check, you know, or they have to walk downstairs to the bank in the lobby and cash the check after the mail carrier delivers it. So those guys tend to move first, but there's nothing wrong with a well-run company while you're waiting for the rest of the market to move. And to the extent that the rest of the market will eventually move, and it will eventually move because it has to, it's just a question of when and, you know, how patient do we have to be and how frustrated will we get along the way. You know, I mean, at least then you're positioned in the right kind of companies. As far as third-party money, that outside money, the big money that's all wrapped up in tech and biotech and, you know, a lot of people out there, they don't know anything about the gold industry. They don't know anything about mining. They don't know. They don't care. They don't want to know. Except, you know, they're going to chase momentum. And when they start to see things move in the mining industry, eventually, where are they going to put their money first? Well, they're going to put their money first in the big, well-run name brand names. That's where they're going to go first. And so if you're there, you know, you'll catch that wave. And then if you know where to go in terms of the top of the list in terms of, you know, the junior explorers, the junior developers, the, you know, just the well-run companies with really nice assets that have been really market neglected for the last couple of years. You know, if you know where to go, you know, on the second move, you know, of the market, you'll catch that wave as well. You know, I mean, we sort of saw that in the beginning of 2016, a couple of years ago, when, you know, between towards the end of January until about, you know, June, July, you saw these multi bag gains in a lot of the junior type companies.
Yeah, you absolutely did. And I think there is a balance there for when the market really does get going, that you can't just rotate all of your money out of the big guys into the little guys and time it perfectly. So there is an argument to have a position in some of these more well-run miners and the royalty companies and in some of the smaller companies. But Byron, in your newsletter, The Gold Speculator, you write about miners, developers, and explorers. What are some of the companies that you can share with us that you think are in this sweet spot?
I mentioned one or two of them already. I mean, a company like, for example, Sabina, which is an incredibly good asset, you know, big numbers, big resource number, really nice grade. And a lot of the hard work is behind them, but I mean, they've done a lot of the hard work to get to where they need to be, you know. They're up there in the high Arctic. They call themselves an explorer, but really they're sort of a junior developer at this stage. But I'll keep calling them an explorer, but you know, because they've got lots more exploration to do. But at the end of last year, at the end of 2018, they completed a pier facility, on a body of water, you know, that accesses their site, you know, up there. And so I was up there talking with the Sabina people, and I said, "Oh, how deep's the water here?" And yeah, they weren't quite sure. They had to look at a bathymetric map, and somebody said, "Oh, it's about 115 feet." And I'm like, "You have a pier next to a 115 foot deep body of water. You could park an aircraft carrier there. You know, in terms of changing the game on their logistics, now you can take a really deep draft ship full of everything you need and sail it up there." And you've just changed the whole logistic equation. Instead of having to fly in every barrel of fuel that you use, or fly in every pound of food that the guys eat, you know, I mean, it's you've just changed the logistics of that whole operation. There's one. Another one that I think is really due for a re-rating pretty soon. We've talked about this before. Is Victoria Gold with building a mine up in the Yukon. I mean, they'll be stacking ore by July. Pouring gold by the fall. I mean, a nice successful play. Another one that I think is just a really true success story has been Atlantic Gold, working in just near Halifax, Nova Scotia, not too far from Halifax. Beautiful, beautiful piece of geology. You're in Nova Scotia. I mean, you can fly into Halifax. You know, no issues with workforce. I mean, they've a big long corridor of exploration potential and an up and running mine. They're over a year now into commercial production, and yeah, they're still tweaking out the little bugs here and there. But boy, they just get better every month, every quarter. Their numbers get better. So those are a couple of names on my top shelf list right now.
All right, Byron, good having you on the show. I appreciate that little recap of that McKinsey and Company report, as well as some of the stocks that you are writing up in your newsletter. Byron, thanks for your time, and have a great long weekend.
Thank you much. Appreciate it.